And so the Buddha says, and what, monks, is right mindfulness? Here, monks, a monk abides, contemplating body as body, ardent, clearly aware and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. He abides, contemplating feelings as feeling. He abides, contemplating mind as mind. He abides, contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, clearly aware, and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. This is called right mindfulness. So in a way here, he's basically defining what is appropriate mindfulness, what is right mindfulness, which is one of the Eightfold Paths, of the Buddhist path. And what is interesting is that mindfulness is just not about being mindful of the breath. It's being mindful of the breath through the body, mindfulness of the body. Then it's also being mindful of the feelings. Then it's also being mindful of the mind. And then it's being aware of the mind object. So in a way, it's being, in a way, there is no place mindfulness cannot be directed towards. But I think it's very important. And I think that's why in daily life it's so important to not reduce mindfulness to just sitting on the cushion, being aware of the breath. But that we can bring mindfulness. This is what, it's not weird. You know, we don't have to start to wear orange clothes, or we don't start to have to wear funny hats, or whatever it is. We don't need anything special. The only thing we need to do is bring ourselves to the experience. And then, of course, we cannot be, that's what we have to be careful, we cannot be equally mindful of everything to the same degree. That is not what we're trying to do. But we can orient our mind. So again, back to what is in the foreground and the rest is in the background. So sometimes we might more, the focus might be more on the body, or the time more on the feelings, or the time more on the mind, or the time more on mind object, what is out there. So it's kind of to see there is a basis of mindfulness, and then in a way you orient it to this or that. And by orienting in such a way, then in a way it's kind of like putting a light onto something. You kind of see it more clearly, as it says, ardent, clearly aware. There is also that notion of ardent, that in a way the mindfulness is not kind of like just, I am mindful. But it's really, there is a certain energy. We need to bring a certain energy to it. That's very important, because that will, in a way, bring more brightness, bring more clarity, if we can have that energy in the mindfulness. So it's not kind of like this detached kind of, you know, vagueness, you know. Then what is also interesting, he said, having put aside anchoring and fretting for the world. So the mindfulness we talk about, actually one of its properties, is that it has this peacefulness. It has a certain restfulness, that when we are mindful, often it helps us to actually be more peaceful. Not that we are totally calm and still in that moment, but that it brings in the mind a certain, I would nearly say, non-disturbance. That actually it helps us to, even if there is some disturbance, it kind of helps us to bring a little spaciousness which is stable around it, so that it is not disturbed. But I'll talk more about this. So that's right mindfulness. Then you have the Buddha, you know, we're talking about his own, how he's mindful of things. And he says, here, Ananda, who was his disciple, for the Tathagata meaning himself, feelings are known as they arise, as they are present, as they disappear. Perceptions are known as they arise, are they present, as they disappear. Thoughts are known as they arise, as they are present, as they disappear. So not only are we mindful, aware of the object, body, feeling, mind, object, but we're also aware of the rising, staying and passing away of the object. So that there is an awareness at two levels. The awareness of the object itself, the experience itself, and then the awareness of the changing nature of the experience, which I think is what really also will help us in terms of creative engagement. If we can start to see how things change, we're going to be with them in a different way. What I think, I don't have children myself, but my sisters have children. And I find it interesting, you know, you see the child, and you can never know what mood they're going to be in, or what they're going to be interested in. You know, 1 minute they're crazy about this, next minute they're crazy about that, and it's kind of like, you know, 1 minute they're into reading, next minute they're into football, and this is it. And you think, well, reading is better, you know. Don't you want to continue to read your book, dear? And then he's full of energy, he wants to play with the ball. So, you know, it's very interesting to look at children, because to me, that's why I dedicated my book, Let Go, to my cat and to my niece. Because to me, both of them represented impermanence. I mean, I could see impermanence in their action, you know, in their feeling, in what was going on. And I think that's what the Buddha is trying to show us there. So mindfulness in the old language, Buddhist language, is sati, S-A-T-I. So sati. And sati, in a way, can mean different things. Basically, it has been translated as mindfulness. But, I mean, it could also have been translated as awareness, as full consciousness, a certain type of attention. But way, way back, 150 years ago, it was translated as mindfulness because of the Bible, because of, you know, the be mindful of the Bible. And that's why they decided, oh, we can do this mindfulness. So let's see, it's a little, again, conditioned, it's a little adventitious why sati was translated as mindfulness. But we'll use it that way. So sati, mindfulness, can be like first, a simple awareness. Just basically a presence of mind, just being aware in the present of what is going on, being present to what is happening inside and outside. And again, to be careful, we cannot be aware to the same degree of everything at once. So it's kind of like basically this simple, basic awareness as a little something different, because it's meditative, because it's of the Buddhist path. It's a non-judgmental observation. Because often you have consciousness. I am conscious. I am conscious of you sitting here. I'm conscious you have different faces, you have different clothes. So, I mean, there is consciousness. And then with the mindfulness, there is, I am aware of you. But there is also an added quality with non-judgmental. But I am not judging you. Notice, you are in the bus, you are in the underground, you are in Oxford Street. I love Oxford Street. And all these people, all these different people shopping, I think it's very interesting. And you know, you can see, your mind go to this, your mind go to that. And very quickly, you know, I like this, I would like it, you know, what? But they, and you go. So often, generally, we are conscious. We're all conscious. But very often, our consciousness is very associated with judgment. Like, dislike, I want, I don't want. And so, in a way, the mindfulness, what we're trying to that's the beginning level, is really to be aware without so much of this I like, I dislike, I want, I don't want. But just to be with the thing itself. So that we're more aware of it without getting in the way. Because often we get in the way of our what we are conscious of. Because in a way, when you look at somebody, often you don't see them as they are, but you see them with certain idea you have about that type of people who wear that type of clothes or you have that type of hair. So even before you meet them, you kind of already know them. When often you have no idea. I mean, that's what is wonderful on retreats, 7-day retreat in silence. And within a day, you know everybody and you know what you like and don't like about them. And you make story about them and at the end, you can talk to them in the last morning and they're generally so different from the story you made up about them. So anyway, the mindfulness is to try to be more, again, in tune with the person, with the situation, with ourselves in that moment. But there is also, with this mindfulness, this idea also of protective awareness. That is not just non-judgmental awareness, but it's also something which is going to protect us. Because in a way there is this question, what is going on? Mindfulness is helping us to see what is going on. So we are aware of something. But more than that, what do we do with it? So there is this protection. And to kind of look, how is what I am aware of impacting on me? I mean, if somebody comes with you with a roses and a big smile, I mean, generally, you feel, it's nice. If something suddenly, you know, take out a gun. You know, I mean, you know, there is a different impact. You are wearing the same way. But I mean, the impact, the color of the experience is very different. So in a way, mindfulness is not saying, ah, rose, 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 gun. No. You know, the protective mindfulness is said, a rose, thank you. A gun. How can I get out of this one? So in a way, there is also an active. I think it's very important to see. It's also active. Mindfulness is active. It sees something, and then it becomes engaged with it. And of course, in the engagement, there is very much this kind of a slight reflection. I would say also this kind of like ethical component. I think this is very important. Because in a way, you could have mindful killing. You know, somebody kills you, but with great mindfulness. You know, they're very aware of their body as they do it. They put a knife in it, you know, totally aware. But I would not call that Buddhist mindfulness. So now it's very important to see that within the mindfulness, there is also this ethical component of wisdom, of compassion. So in a way, we kind of look at the impact. We look at what we are impacted by the situation and how do we respond to it? Are we reacting or are we creatively responding? Just a minor example. You are waiting for somebody. Some of you have heard me say this, but some of you have not. So, you're waiting for somebody. 9 o'clock, he or she is not here. 9:10, he or she does not love me. 9:20, nobody loves me. 9:30, I hate the world. So in a way, you have the condition, contact, impact. You're waiting for somebody, the person is not arriving. So you're mindful of the fact they were supposed to be here, they're not here. Then what do you do? You see, if you have this protective mindfulness, you might think, why? Maybe I need to phone them to see what happened, which is what I did recently. And the person said, oh, I thought it was next week. Same time, same place. Instead of going, again, they do it on purpose, I would never do this, etc., etc. So it's kind of in a way to see. You have the impact, then the mindfulness can bring the space so that we don't go immediately in the loop. But then there can be this creative, we could call ethical engagement. There will be more spaciousness in that encounter. So one of the element of mindfulness, it's often defined as it's not wobbly and it's not floating away from the object. So in a way, the mindfulness helps us to be grounded, helps us to be anchored. And that's what is very interesting to see when we become vague or we become a little wobbly. What happens? Often we're not anchored. Something has taken us away. It's very interesting to see what is it that takes us away, which ungrounds us, which makes us wobbly, which makes us a little kind of, you know, agitated. What is it? What happened? Sometimes it's busyness, sometimes it's stress, sometimes it's pain. If you are in great physical pain, it's going to be much harder to be grounded, especially if it's on all your whole nervous system. I used to have really bad sciatica. And when I had it, I would cry for anything. Because actually my whole nervous system was activated. And so it was not that I was especially sad, but my whole system. So then when I became aware of it, then I would just see, oh yes, it doesn't mean I am sad, it means that as soon as I had sciatica, I would know, now I'm going to be a little funny. Kind of, I would feel funny. My whole body would feel funny. So anyways, kind of to kind of see what is it that makes me wobble, what is it that does not. And I think often you will see that if you become mindful, you are more mindful of what is going on. It's like, in a way, from going from being a little wobbly to, it's like becoming back to a tree. Before you were kind of like, you know, in the up, you come back to feeling that groundedness within yourself. And to me, this is one of the important elements of a day like this, is actually you are building the stability. You are building the groundedness. Like, you sit, and it's true, not much is happening. Possibly lots of thought of this and that, and you feel, well, not much is going on here. But actually, you're building this groundedness within yourself, which then becomes a refuge. So that even if something is a little difficult, you can find that groundedness, that anchoring in yourself through the mindfulness of coming back to the body, coming back to yourself. Another thing is absence of confusion. That actually with mindfulness comes clarity. Because again, you're not caught in just one thing, but there is kind of more this spaciousness, there is kind of more this clarity. And so that it orients you to time and place. That's what, when you're mindful, it's kind of like suddenly things are more in place. Notice, when you're distracted, actually you're not here. You come back to the breath, you come back to the body, you come back to the sound. You come back to everything else. It's kind of like you're back to, I am sitting here in meditation on a Sunday in London, instead of being 2 years ago, 10 years ahead, or whatever it is. You kind of, it's kind of back to the experience, to the orienting. Third is engaging object in experience. And I think it's very important to see mindfulness is not just like being like a mirror. Often there is this comparison to a mirror. But it's actually helping us to engage in the experience and not, and this one has to be careful about, not to be above the experience. And this is something we have to be really careful about, that we don't use mindfulness to add it to the policeman or policewoman we have on the shoulder, checking everything, checking everybody, scanning, generally for bad things, you know, myself, others, you know. And kind of, you know, time to time it kind of hit you on the head, you know, that was not good. We have to be very careful not to use mindfulness in that way. Mindfulness is to help us to penetrate more in the experience, not to be like a judge who never takes holiday. Then there is, so what I said, the ethical discernment. There is also this wholesome stability I talked about, but also this exploratory, probing quality. And to me, this is why, in a way, as we develop meditation, we develop mindfulness. And I think it doesn't matter. You see, when I used to be a Zen practitioner, and I used not to do awareness practice. Because for 10 years, what I did was just to ask, what is this? What is this? What? That's all I did. No talks of awareness, mindfulness, anything. And within 6 months, I was aware. I was aware of my mind, I was aware of what was going on. And so, to me, it's like the component, concentration and inquiry, makes you more mindful. But that mindfulness is not just to be like kind of this scanning person, kind of just becoming a scanner of everything around us. But again, to have, it gives us more like this questioning, exploratory interest into our life, into others. So that it has these exploratory probing qualities. Then when we look at mindfulness, there are a lot of similes. And two similes, I think, two examples are interesting. One of the gatekeeper. That mindfulness is like a gatekeeper at a gate. First one, it protects from danger. And I think, back to the example of waiting. You see, if you know you have problem waiting, then, you know, as soon as you're waiting, you start to be like, you know, are they going to come or not? Because if they come, it will prove they love me or not, you know. And if they later than 15 minutes, it means that really they don't consider to them. So if you have something with waiting, in a way, mindfulness can be, hey, wait, be careful. You're going to be in a situation which will trigger you. And so, you know, be careful with all this spinning thought, which might not be useful in that moment, in that way. Then the gatekeeper also receives important message that actually the mindfulness helps us to see more clearly what is going on, not just with ourselves, but what is going on with others. To me, this is important, that by being more mindful, actually we're more spacious, we're less self-centered, and then we can be more open to others. So in a way, we can receive message from ourselves, from others. Then we deliver, the gatekeeper delivers the message in an efficient way. And I think the mindfulness can help us to be more clear, to see what is important, what is not important. Because generally everything, often we put to the same degree. Everything is amazingly, terribly, awfully important. Everything. Well, actually not. Something it really does not matter. And something it does matter. So in a way to see, you know, it kind of brings more gradation, I think, of what is light, what is habitual, what is intense, what is it I need to consider. I think it kind of makes us see, again, in a more wide way. Another of the simile is that of the plowman. That is like a plowman pushing its plow and making this kind of a furrow in the field. And the first thing that the plowman needs is clarity of direction. So that in a way the mindfulness generally is oriented. It goes in a certain direction. And of course, for the Buddhist, mindfulness it goes toward wisdom and compassion. This is something you can see again and again. The Buddha talks about harmlessness, about non-ill will. So the mindfulness we're developing is not to become greater sportsmen. It's not to become greater businessmen so we can, you know, get more money out of more people. Because you see, mindfulness can be used in that way. But I think for us, if we're here, it seems to me that the orientation of the mindfulness is wisdom, is compassion. It has, again, that ethical component. Then the plowman, another thing, he must apply the gold with the right pressure. If he pushes too much, he can't advance. If it's too light, nothing happens. So in a way, it's the same when we do meditation, when we cultivate mindfulness. We must have, again, the right pressure. Not to be too intent, I must be mindful, and then you become too intense. Like, you go home, and I must be mindful. Martin said, I must be mindful. Then you go into scanning mode. Inner scanning, outer scanning. And you must not miss anything. So you get really tense. And then you start to double guess. You know, am I mindful of being mindful of being mindful? And then you don't see anything, you know. And you fall down the steps. So, in a way, to keep the right pressure. And to me, in a way, one of the ways to keep the right pressure is actually to be aware in the body. To be aware in the body and to be aware in the physical environment. Generally, we'll deal a little with this double guessing, kind of, sometimes we can use the mindfulness. So just to be careful also with the right pressure. And then the last one is that the plowman reveals by digging. So that as he digs, you know, if something is revealed. And I think this is often the thing what happened with meditation, with mindfulness, is that actually we bring our mindfulness to something and then we see something we had not thought before. And often that's what I think is called insight. But I think it's because you are mindful in a certain way that then you can see something you have not seen before. And often that's what we experience in meditation. And I think if one talk about some of the effect of mindfulness, is more that revealing quality. That it is not like a mirror as such, because a mirror just shows what is there. But I feel when we become mindful, then we see more than is there, actually. To me, that was my first major insight. And I thought, oh yeah, this is working. Because I was sitting in meditation doing this, what is this, what is this, what is this? Not being mindful specially, I thought. And suddenly I became so mindful, so aware. It was so clear about my mind. Mindfulness of mind. Suddenly, without trying to do it, became mindful of my mind. And I realized my mind was totally self-centered. I was thinking about me, about everything related to me. All my thoughts were related to me. And it was a shock, because since the age of 10, I want to save the world. And you know, I am the most compassionate person in the world. And suddenly I realized, this is not true. You know, I am thinking about me first. And what was interesting about that moment is that I did not feel bad. Oh, I'm a terrible Buddhist, I think about myself all the time. I just realized this is a difficulty, this is a problem, you know, that all my thought is centered about me. And then that's the job. My job now is to kind of, you know, diminish the percentage from 95% to 50%, we hope. And also I felt it was light. And to me, that's what, in a way, comes with mindfulness, is a certain lightness. And I think that's what we can see. Is it mindfulness, like in the meditative tradition, then there will be this lightness, this spaciousness, this kind of something being revealed. When it becomes this judging mindfulness, then that is not there. And I think it's for us a way to notice if we move from one. You know, we're moving from what I would call cultivation of the mindfulness to checking the mindfulness. And again, this is one way to know. One is light and the other will generally be more heavy. So, this is what I wanted to say today. So now we can just stand up for a minute and we'll have some sitting. So we just